Hello there. Welcome back to Dr. Ray Talks It Over. This program is designed for parents and families where the aim is to help you stand strong as a parent for the sake of your children. I'm Jerry Usher, and today we're going to continue our discussion from last time, Making Discipline Work, with Dr. Ray Guarendi, father of 10, psychologist, and author. Dr. Ray, how are you doing this time?
Hi, Jerry, father of 10. Well, I haven't been home for a day or two, and I'm a little nervous because you never know. I go home with my wife, and I'm afraid to ask what's new.
Well, I'm sure she'll tell you. You know, we've covered a lot of ground in the programs we have done so far, and one thing I noticed, you emphasize discipline quite a bit, and obviously for good reasons. You've given us some great examples as to why, but if you could expound upon that a little bit more, why do you think discipline is so important?
First of all, it is the number one struggle among parents these days. Good or bad parents alike, they struggle with discipline. The very best, the most loving, the most conscientious, the most Christian of parents tend to struggle with discipline, so I focus a lot on it. Two, Jerry, who are the only people who are likely to listen to this show on parenting? I mean, these are people, yeah, they're going to want to be better parents. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, they don't need me sitting here saying, you know, you need to be more loving. You know, you need to be more encouraging. You know, you need to do good things for your children. I'm going to make an assumption about my audience. They're loving people.
They're already
loving people, yeah. If they struggle, it's with discipline. So mm-hmm. I hit discipline hard. Thirdly, our culture has become so permissive regarding discipline that parents who are going to raise godly kids really need a hefty push in a discipline direction, because they look around them and it's too easy to get swept along by the now dominant tide of permissiveness, laxity, and psycho-trendy theories in our culture. So those are just a few main reasons why I really focus on discipline.
Well, and as you mentioned before, the majority of people probably err on that side that you just mentioned, laziness, lax in discipline, and so forth.
It's human nature.
What about the other extreme? Is it possible to be too strict?
Ooh, great question. I'm going to give you a short answer. In a loving context, it is very, very hard to be too strict. You can be mean. You can be harsh. All too often we confuse the two. Jerry, would it be too strict if I had a rule in my home that in any way, shape, or form, you are not allowed to mistreat your brother?
No.
Okay. So if that's too strict, would I then say, all right, you're allowed to push him twice a day and maybe one punch in the head? I don't want to be too strict. You know, because I don't want to discipline you if you call him a name, because that's too strict. So I'll let you call him one name. Do you see what I'm saying?
And as much as you want on weekends.
Oh, there you go. There you go. I'll try to compromise with you so I'm not too strict. No. If you have high moral standards, then you enforce those standards. Obviously, kids misbehave thousands of times per year. That's the nature of a child. You as a parent ideally will deal with most of those. And by the way, the reality is most of us parents deal with some of them. And for the most part, God is merciful, and that's good enough to raise a great kid. But ideally, if you were 100% consistent, you would deal with that misconduct, and many would label that too strict.
Mm-hmm.
If my son is outside running across the flower beds, and I don't give him a warning, I just simply say, you're in the house now, son. And my neighbor sees me do this and says, well, that's kind of strict, isn't it? I mean, don't you think you're just, you know, you're kind of hammering him for just running in the flower beds? I mean, might you just make him sit for 10 minutes? And I could look and say, you don't understand. He's known for years you don't run in the flower beds. I don't think I need to tell him again. So when we say too strict, many people think it means putting your achievement standards too high. I want him to get straight A's when he's only a C student. I want him to score 3 soccer goals when, in fact, the kid can't chew gum and run out in the field by himself. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about. We are talking about morals and character. And in the area of morals and character, in a loving home, it's hard to be too strict. You can be mean, but it's hard to be too strict.
Almost sounds like you're saying you can almost put a numerical value on this. If you yourself have communicated to the child what is and is not acceptable, and they break that rule, if you are enforcing that 100% of the time, you are not being too strict.
No.
You're just being consistent.
You're just being consistent, sure.
And anything less than that would be almost lax then, or lax to a certain degree.
Lax to a certain degree, but the reality is most of us. Parents will say to me, "What do you think, Ray, is the average consistency level of a parent?" And I say, "Average, probably between 10% and 25%." And if you think that sounds too low, Jerry, if I tell my son to hang up his coat 3 times without doing anything about it, well, I'm down to 25%. Right now, even if I act on the next time, it's 25%. And most of us repeat ourselves constantly. Now, one other thing about being too strict. Parents will say, but can't you give too big a penalty? Okay, he bumped his brother. Rocky, Bruno, I don't want either one of you guys going next to each other for the next 2 weeks. I don't want you breathing on each other. I don't want you looking at each other. Okay, so we overreact in the heat of a moment. Yes, that's too strict. But as soon as you realize it, you go back and you say, hey, guys, I overkilled it. No problem.
How do you know what to discipline and maybe what to let go in a certain situation?
The old pick your battles, huh?
Mm-hmm.
The experts have done a real nice job confusing parents on this one. When an average secular expert says, pick your battles, what they're saying is, decide what the big stuff is as a parent and let the little stuff go. And all too often, they mean the little moral stuff. For example, if a child throws a fit, if a child destroys something in a house, okay, that's a big one. We got to deal with that, according to maybe an expert. But if he's walking by his brother and he trips and bumps into him and his brother turns and says, quit it! And he turns and says, you quit it, you're stupid, get out of the way. The expert might say, oh, don't fight that one. That's just a little sibling battle. That doesn't mean anything. Let it go. Pick your battles. He's not firing off a nuclear warhead. But in fact, for the Catholic Christian parent, Jerry, is it wrong to abuse your brother?
Yes.
Yes, it is. It's wrong. Now, it may not be as gravely wrong as putting your fist through a wall in your bedroom. That depends on the abuse of the brother. But a name call to the brother is wrong. So when I tell parents pick your battles, here's what I use as the defining term, moral. If the behavior is wrong or immoral or hurts someone, then you deal with it, no matter how small. If it is kid junk, say he's sitting watching TV and he's twirling his hair, and he's standing on his head. Maybe he's picking his nose. And you're getting irritated. It's like, sit still. Would you please sit still? Well, in fact, he's not doing anything wrong. That's kid junk. You send her to bed. She goes to bed. She lays in bed. And she sings. Now, there's no other sibling in the room to keep awake. She's just singing. Jesus loves me, this I know. Now, maybe her singing hurts, and maybe you could punish her for her singing. But she's in bed. And she's not hurting anything. So maybe you decide, that's not a moral issue. I won't worry about it. Pick your battles from a moral perspective. And remember, as a Christian parent, your morals may be very different than that secular expert's who points out, well, I don't think you should be concerned with that. Small example. About 2-3 years ago, I was watching a show where a father was denying a 12-year-old boy the chance to go to an acid rock music concert. They had an expert behind a two-way mirror analyzing the father for the TV show. And the expert was basically just picking apart the father's style.
Mm-hmm.
And the expert said, now you see, the father needs to pick his battles here. The child clearly really wants to go to that rock concert. So instead of just flat out saying no, which would breed resentment in the child, maybe the father should find a compromise. Maybe the father should go to the rock concert with the boy. Or maybe the father could say, what other activity would you like, son? Maybe we'll go to church together. No, the expert didn't say that. He wouldn't bring that up. But you see what he was doing? He was saying, see, this dad needs to compromise. Instead of just flat out saying, no, at age 12, there's no way on God's green earth I'm ever going to let you go within 200 miles of a rock concert. The expert said, well, I think he needs to pick what battle he's going to fight. You know, maybe the battle will be you can't go alone. but I'll get a security force to go with you. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Army battalion.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Parents need to know when to look at this and go, no, from a moral perspective, that's wrong, even if it's done in a slight way.
Here's one for you. You have 10 kids. How do you manage all of them? You may be talking to a lot of people.
I don't
people
let
like,
them in the house. You can't let them in the house all at the same time. You realize the depreciation?
There you go. Well, you may be talking to a lot of folks out there who have a house full of kids right now. And, you know, father may be working all day. The mother's at home. You know, it's kind of a stereotypical way to look at it. But in some cases, that's the way it is. How do you keep track? You know, you may have specific disciplines in force at that particular moment for some of the kids, and some of them are getting out of hand over here, and some are getting out of hand over there. How do you deal with that?
Simple discipline rule that I made up right before the show. Long-standing rule of nature I made up about 10 minutes ago. The simpler it is, the more likely we are to do it. The more likely we are to do it, the better it works. The better it works, the less we have to do it. As a parent, especially as a parent of many, pick your discipline and make it real simple. For example, a four-year-old who disobeys. Maybe 90% of the time you could use a corner for disobedience. Go to the corner. You don't have to think. You see, where parents get confused. Now does he get his bike back tomorrow, or was that the next day? Okay, now you took the television away for 3 days last week. Now, did he get 2 days back, or was that on a Tuesday? That television thing doesn't go through the weekend, does it? All right, now, when does he get dessert back? Now, did Grandma take it away last week? You can't keep track.
Exactly.
You're not a bookkeeper.
Exactly.
There's too much. Or sticker systems. You ever walk into a house of parents, a preschooler, got the sticker system up on the refrigerator? Sticker systems go up on refrigerators to die. Refrigerators are monuments to dead sticker systems. They last about 7 days. You usually see made bed, and it's got a little chart, a little star up there. You know, kiss dog, a little chart up there. You know, brush brother's teeth, got a little star up there. And then it fades out. About the third week, you start to see the stars fade away. And I go, well, did he not do that stuff anymore? Oh, no, I ran out of stars, and I just never went out to get them. Yeah, we're not bookkeepers. So as parents, we need to find something simple, quick, that we can use at a moment's notice. I call it the discipline mainstays. Example, preschoolers. I love the corner. Corner is boring. You got your face in it. It's better than a chair or the steps for timeout because they sit and watch the family go by if they're sitting on the steps or in a chair. Put them in a corner. You can use that corner for virtually most day-to-day misbehavior, and you make it whatever length you think is appropriate for the misbehavior. The room. Now, if you're going to use the room, you got to get Disney World out of there. There's just no question. You can't have the side-by-side refrigerator freezer up there and the triple-tier cable TV set. You got to get Disneyland out of there. Use the room. In our home, with our older children, usually about 8 and above, we use essays. I love essays. Hmm. Essays can be any length. They can be on any topic. They can be gone over with the child. They put conscience on paper. They can be graded grammatically and corrected. They can be given any time, any place, anywhere, at church, at a restaurant, at grandma's house, and they preempt all privileges until I get my essay. A cute thing about the essays, I have 5 boys and 5 girls. And boys and girls definitely approach life differently. General rule there, that God wired us a little differently. I'll give my son an essay, and he'll say, "Dear Dad, I am sorry I yelled at Sarah to get out of my room. You shouldn't do that. She's your sister, and you should treat her nice. So the next time she comes in the room, I'll ask her real nice to leave, and if she doesn't, I'll come and get you. Because if I treat her mean, you do not like it, and Mom does not like it, and God does not like it, and Jesus does not like it, and Mary does not like it, and St. Clair does not like it, and St. Paul does not like it." Now that's my son. My daughter. "Dear Dad, I'm sorry I told Sarah to get out of my room. That wasn't a nice thing to do. The next time, I'll try to ask her nicer. But you know, we wouldn't have this problem if you and Mom kept a closer eye on her. It seems to be that she's the one getting ripped up in the essay." So remember, the essays have to be respectful.
You've got some other terms that you like to use, escalation, blackout, things like that. What are those? Explain those to our listeners.
Escalation is one of the most frustrating discipline phenomena that parents experience. It is the idea that the majority of children do not like to be disciplined. They do not want to be disciplined. They resist discipline. Escalation is the resisting of discipline. Don't you dare put me in the corner. I'll come out 23 times. Don't you send me to my room. I'll stomp all the way up the stairs. I'll slam the door, and I'll throw my stuffed animals at my door, and then I'll come out. Don't ground me. I'll stomp around this house surly, and I'll make life miserable for the next 3 days for everybody here. Don't tell me to write an essay, because I'll turn that essay in, and it'll be a vitriolic attack on this whole family. Basically, what escalation is don't discipline me. I'll get worse. And I tell parents, this is such a common phenomenon, but it's something that really has to be dealt with firmly. Because if you don't, what happens is the child then learns, Dad, you don't have any right to put consequences on me because I will challenge your authority. Children misbehave constantly, Jerry. That's the nature of the beast. But when they deliberately defy you attempting to hold them accountable, they are now challenging your parental authority. And that is the number one reason why I see parents in therapy. Because it isn't that they may not know what to do regarding discipline. It's that they get shell-shocked by the child's resistance. And therefore, everything becomes a brawl now. I routinely ask parents, if you told him in this tone of voice, go to the corner, young man. Melissa, you please go up to your bed and sit down. Joanna, you go sit at the kitchen table and you define 10 dictionary words for me that mean respect. Would they do it? And the majority of parents will say no. No, not without a fight. Or I have to get mad. Or I have to take them by the arm and drag them there. Or I have to take them over to the table and hover over them. The children won't do it just because the parents said so. And I said, that's escalation. And sometimes it can get real ugly. It can get so ugly that the child simply will not do it and will defeat the parent no matter what. In extreme cases, you've got adolescents walking out of the home. You've got them running away. You've got them busting things up. You've got them cursing at parents. Okay, those are extreme cases, but they do happen. And the parent then has to decide, for example, what am I going to do about this? Let me give you an example of what my wife did. One of our children, we got older, and he had been spoiled. And he threw temper fits as routinely as he breathed. So when he would throw a fit, he'd have to go to his room and he'd have to stay. And he would stay until he was totally, completely calm and then for a significant period after that. But he escalated. He wouldn't be quiet. He carried on and on. My wife did this. After he came downstairs and he was happy again and the world returned to normal and the nuclear cloud had dissipated, he'd say, Mom, can I go outside now? And she'd say, no, Johnny, you can't. Not after a fit like that, you can't. A little bit later, Mom, can I have some dessert? No, Johnny, you can't. Not after a fit like that, you can't. Can I watch TV, Mom? No, John, you can't. Not after a fit like that. What she did is she made him pay multiple prices for that heavy piece of escalation because she wanted to show him, son, you don't understand. If you would just take your consequence, life would be over and we'd move on with no problem. But when you resist like that, multiple things are going to happen to you. And you know how long it took even then, Jerry? It took a year.
Okay. What about the issue of blackout? What is that?
Oh, my favorite technique that parents after talks will say, that's the one I like. Tell me that blackout again. Here's how blackout works. When a child refuses to take a consequence, let's say a five-year-old will not stand in the corner, go to her room, sit on the steps, put her head down at the dining room table. Automatic blackout kicks in. Blackout is the complete, total cessation of all privileges. Everything except love, air, food, water, and maybe the bathroom. I tell parents, you control everything. Electrical outlets, utilities, laundry service, food service, money supply, transportation, all links to the outside world, computer chips, the airwaves, you control life. So therefore, if that 13-year-old looks at you and says, I will not write the essay, there's no way you're going to get a stupid essay out of me, the child can then go on blackout. I don't know how he's getting to soccer practice. There is no transportation. It's all shut down. I don't know how he's even going to call anybody. There's no phone available. There's no computer. There's no outside. There's no phone. There's no friends. There's no dessert. If you go to Pizza Hut tonight, he has to go. He does not eat. Eating out is a privilege. He can make a sandwich before he goes. School tomorrow, he better pack his own lunch because there's no money to buy a lunch. He has to pack his own lunch. How about clothes? Well, if you want to wash some of them, okay, but I wouldn't wash the ones he likes. I'd certainly wash the ones you think he needs to wear. One time my son was on blackout for a very ugly piece of behavior, and when my wife made him supper, it was green beans and some kind of soup. Good food, perfectly nutritious, but it certainly wasn't going to be anything that he wanted. So I tell parents, and this is particularly powerful with single moms who are staring at 15-year-old adolescent boys that are 8 inches taller and 40 pounds heavier, and their attitude is,
who are you?
Yeah, who are you? You can't put me in my room. And I tell the moms, blackout, you control everything, and you can shut it all down until you get that consequence. Parents will ask, when's blackout over? Well, it's over when you get the behavior, when you get the consequence. You know, if you initially gave a 400-word essay, and he refused, and he just got ugly about it, and you decide, well, it's 800 words now, and that's what I want until I get it, blackout is in effect. And it works with little kids. Mom, I watched Barney. No, honey, you don't watch Barney. You owe mommy a lot of time in the corner first. Mama, I have a chocolate sundae with a nuts. No, honey, you don't get a chocolate sundae with a nuts. Sarah gets a chocolate sundae with a nuts. You watch. There is that little irksome, nagging feeling inside parents. Oh, it just seems so mean. It's like smashing a gnat with a sledgehammer. No, it's not, Jerry. It's ultimately very kind. Because as a parent, if you cannot say to a child, you were very, very disruptive today in CCD, and your teacher who volunteers her time doesn't need you creating chaos in the class, so you owe her a 300-word apology as well as several things you're going to do for me to make it up for her. You need to be able to enforce that. Because if you can't, you're not only impotent, but then you get ugly. They go together. If you're an impotent parent, if you feel like I can't get him to do it, it's only a matter of time before you're going to really get ugly. And that's why blackout's important, because it gives you that power that you have.
Well, Dr. Ray, we're running short on time here, 3 or 4 minutes left in this particular program. In closing, I guess this time, if a parent realizes he or she needs to be stronger in discipline, should they change all at once or a little bit at a time?
When a situation goes in a direction that a parent realizes is not good, and it varies. Some realize this when the child's 2. Some realize it when the child's 11. Some realize it when the child's 17. And that's usually when I get the call. When they decide, hey, it's either slipping out of my control, or family life is not pleasant like I would hope it would be, or I don't like what I'm becoming, or I don't like what my child's becoming, any of those things can happen at any point along the parenting continuum. And the good parent says, yeah, I got to step back and make some adjustments. The next question is, do I change everything all at once, like you asked? Or do I start out with the big stuff? Maybe I'll deal with disrespect first, and then I'll move into chores, and then I'll start to work on homework. Almost always, my answer is, you change everything all at once. Now, the reasons for that, one, you couldn't change everything all at once even if you wanted to. Even if I said, yeah, change everything all at once, you couldn't go home and go, okay, I'll do it all. Because you're human, and you've been parenting in a certain direction for a certain amount of time. Turning that boat around is like turning a big luxury liner around in the middle of the ocean. It takes forever and many, many miles.
So advising them to change everything at once is really the only way to get real change set in motion.
There you go. That's exactly right. Second reason. Let's say you decided to deal with disrespect first. Well, the faulty logic there is that you're going to conquer disrespect. You're not going to conquer it. You're going to deal with it, and it'll get better. But at some level, you're going to deal with this until the day the child leaves your house. So you'll never get to a point where you go, okay, I've got that conquered. Now let's move on to sibling quibbling. No, you can't take it one at a time. And even if you could, As long as it takes you to deal with disrespect, you're now letting the other stuff go on 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 months longer.
Reinforcing it.
That's what you're doing. You're keeping the old habits in place for those. So you change as much as you can all at once. I use this analogy. Jerry, you ever bowl?
Sure.
What's your average?
Ooh, now I don't know. Might be 175, 160, okay. 175.
I need you to have a 215 average, okay, Jerry? So what I want you to do is start to bowl tonight and every night of the week if you have to until you get your average up to 215. Now, come back in 6 months, would you? And you come back in 6 months, and I go, Jerry, what's your average? You go, that's a 196. Jerry, I said I need a 215. Now, would you please give me a 215? It's very possible for a skilled bowler. Get me a 215. Now, go bowl every night of the week again. You come back 6 months later. What is it, Jerry? 209. Jerry! You see, you're putting your whole will into changing your bowling average, and that's just bowling, and it's taken a year. Can you imagine how much it takes to turn that parenting thing? So you put your whole will into it, and you just start moving.
Well, that's good stuff. In fact, this is all so good, I think. Why don't we continue with this topic next week again?
Stay on discipline?
Yes.
I'm telling you, it's the one that I think most touches where most of us are.
Well, you know, a lot of people listening might want to find out more about what we've talked about this time or get in touch with you. There are different ways to do that. Why don't we share that with them?
Well, you can always get my books in my mother's basement. She has a big stack there. And you just ask Mom, if, can I have your son's book? Best way to get a hold of me is the internet, www.kidbrat.com. And, of course, I'm with you guys. Speakers Bureau, to be associated with Catholic Answers, is a very nice bonus.
Very good. Dr. Ray, thanks for everything.
Thanks,
Look forward to next time. Next time, again, as I said, we will continue with the topic, Making Discipline Work, as we continue with Dr. Ray Talks It Over. God bless. Thanks for joining us.